Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and welcome to an hour of mind power. Well, we're going to change that a little bit, because what we're going to do is talk about an hour of food power. Not total hour, but it's going to be time for us to talk about some wonderful, wonderful recipes that you can fix, especially if you like vegetables or if you're wanting your family to eat more, or if you're looking at perhaps changing your food patternings. We have a wonderful gal, Mary Beth Abrams. We're going to be talking about her cookbook, The Four Ingredient Vegan. Mary Beth, welcome to the show.
Hi, it's great to be here.
Now, Mary Beth, this you did along with Ann Denshaw, and I really think that it's a cookbook that could be just about in anybody's kitchen, especially since we all know that vegetables are so important for us to have in our diet, but having variations and various ways of preparing food so that they are tasty and delicious is wonderful. But I really wanted to address some things that you have right in the very front of your book. Now, you are a vegan. I want you to explain what a vegan is.
Yes, actually, I pronounce it vegan. You know, a lot of people
vegan.
Do pronounce
vegan.
It vegan, but the sort of a technical way to say it is vegan. And there's two definitions that I'm going to give you. One definition has to do with what you might call the vegan diet. And the vegan diet is kind of like vegetarianism. However, all animal products are excluded from the diet. So it's vegetarian without dairy and eggs, because dairy and eggs come from an animal. So that's a vegan diet, otherwise referred to as a plant-based diet. Now, some people might identify themselves as vegan, and for those people, it goes beyond the actual way that they eat. It also has to do with avoiding the use of animal products in other areas of their life. For example, household products, clothing, and also not only for you know, for health, it generally goes beyond that to compassion for all living beings.
Okay, so we have that definition. Now, you bring out some points of detail that regarding food and nutrition that I know for a fact is true. And one of them that you bring out in the book is that one of the best ways for people to get calcium in their diet is by eating collard greens, kale, bok choy, red beans, sesame seeds, and white beans. And this has been proven many, many, many times. Your winter vegetables, especially, are so high in their mineral calcium content. Carrots are also known for having some of that. This is something that I'd like to see encouraged more, because our family just loves kale. And, of course, that's a vegetable that in the South was considered the poor man's food. And the black people just loved it. Their collard greens, their turnip greens, their kale. And it really has tremendous health benefits. Tell us a little bit about those vegetables and why they are so significant.
Yes. Oh, I would love, I'm happy that you asked that question. It'll be my pleasure to answer that. A few things that come to mind. One is, those vegetables, those dark green vegetables, those cruciferous vegetables, all of those colorful vegetables, they, you know, many of them that you mentioned are very high in calcium. All of those vegetables are very high in antioxidants. They're high in fiber. They're high in those nutrients that help prevent disease and help bring wellness. And to go into the calcium question, you know, just a little bit more, as you mentioned, those dark green vegetables, you know, a lot of those beans, sesame seeds, great source of calcium. Now, it's not just that they're a good alternative to dairy as a way to get calcium. It actually kind of goes beyond that. If it's okay, I'd like just to talk a little bit about dairy for the moment, because a lot of people rely on dairy for their calcium. And there's no doubt about it that dairy contains a lot of calcium. The interesting thing with dairy, though, is that it's also very high in sulfur-containing amino acids. In other words, the protein in dairy is made from amino acids that are very high in sulfur, which means that it's a very acidic product. And when we consume foods that are very high in sulfur-containing amino acids, the pH of our blood drops out of an alkaline place and into an acidic place. And our body doesn't want to have blood in an acidic range because it sets the stage, basically, for all kinds of disease, cancer, heart disease, diabetes, osteoporosis, basically just about all the chronic diseases that we know of will thrive in an acidic environment. So our body doesn't want to be acidic. Now, when we consume food, for example, dairy, that are very acidic and our pH goes into an acidic place, our body does a very interesting thing to try to get the pH back up. What it does is it releases calcium from the bones into the bloodstream because the calcium is very alkaline. So our body thinks, what can I do to get this acidic blood back up into an alkaline state? I know, I'll release this very alkaline mineral, you know, from the bones, the calcium, in order to try to get it back up. So ironically, when people consume milk or yogurt or cottage cheese, they actually end up losing bone mass in order to compensate for the fact that the dairy is so high in sulfur. So when people consume dairy and other foods that are high in the sulfur-containing amino acids, it does tend to contribute to bone loss. And ultimately, that excess calcium that has been, you know, dumped into the bloodstream does get urinated out, which leads to kidney stones because that excess calcium then has to go through the kidneys. So it's interesting. The countries in the world, well, actually, let me put it this way. Then I'll finish this up and we can move on to the next your next question just to kind of wrap that up. There's only one country in the entire world that consumes more dairy than we do. And that's the only country in the whole world that actually has more osteoporosis than we do. There's a very direct correlation between the consumption of very acidic foods and their rates of fractures due to osteoporosis. So in our culture, osteoporosis is not so much a disease of lack of calcium. It's a disease of excess animal protein, which is what contains the sulfur-containing amino acids.
I'd be interested in knowing what the blood test results would be on the Maasai, since they do nothing. Well, they drink blood primarily from their animals, but they mix it often with the milk of the animal. I wonder.
That's
if
interesting.
Yes, I wonder if the blood, the constitution of the blood of the animal. And I know we're digressing here, but it's just a curious thing because of what you said. What country is it that you say consumes dairy more than the United States?
It's one of the northern European countries. At least the last time I checked, it was either Norway or Sweden. I think it varies a little bit year to year.
Right.
Yeah, it is.
And Holland has been, they are, you know, Europeans love their cheese, and as we Americans do. I mean, we're big cheese eaters. So it's a very interesting thing. But when you are talking about dairy products, yogurt, that is a fermented kind of a product, and yet it's eaten by people that have had yaks, and you know, it's forms of yogurt have been around for, my goodness, well, I don't even think we know how long they've been around. Since we've had domesticated animals of some kind, because that could be kept, the cultures. And of course, they're loaded with enzymes, but my goodness, all the Middle Eastern people that I've ever known through the years, they really love their yogurt, and it has an entirely different flavor than what we get in the grocery store. It's got a tang to it. It's absolutely wonderful. Well, I told my audience that we were going to be sharing some recipes, and I thought if we're going to start off with something, let's start off with something that is really really good, and that is cashew French toast. I mean, just an image of cashew French toast is just absolutely awesome. Now, for those of you listening, you may not be a vegan or a vegan. It's very important to understand anything that we can do, and many of these recipes are adaptable in various ways that I think could be very flavorful. But the thing is that you're taking in good foods, and they are healthy foods. But this cashew French toast, and I like French toast, this is really, really good. Now, I'm not a vegan. Mm-hmm. So this is really interesting to me. I want to ask you a question before we get this recipe out. What is non-hydrogenated vegan margarine? I've never heard of that.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. In your grocery store, if you go down the health food aisle and look in the refrigerated case, you'll see some butter substitutes. And they are made from vegetable oil, so they certainly count as a margarine as opposed to a butter. However, they're not made with hydrogenated oils. And, you know, I've never looked into how they're made, but it's nice just for somebody, if they are avoiding dairy, that there you can actually have a butter substitute that, you know, that is not does not have trans fat in it. But it's not a food I would recommend that anybody eat a lot, even if they are vegan. I mean, I have a container of that in my refrigerator. It'll probably last at least 6 months. It's very rare for me to put something like that on toast. I would be more likely to use almond butter, something that has a lot of, where you get a lot of bang for your buck, you know, in terms of fiber and nutrients and everything. I think that one of the few, times that I use that non-hydrogenated margarine is when I'm making the French toast, because you just have that flavor in there and it's incredible. I have also used coconut oil, actually, in the past, but
that's what a lot of people prefer. Yeah,
it's got this really wonderful toasty flavor. It's really, really, really good. But yeah, that recipe, ooh, I'd love to talk about that.
Yeah, so let's go into it, because this is good, folks. I mean, after all, if you're like me, you've got a sweet tooth. Forget this not ever having something sweet. That's ridiculous. That's not going to happen in my lifetime. But this would be something that is really going, that is healthy. And you can use your almond milk. You could use rice milk if you wanted. They now have them so they've got vanilla in it, or you could add your own. But let me give you the recipe here. It's 1 1/4 cups of vanilla non-dairy milk. And if you're not a vegan, I guess you could use regular milk. 3/4 cup of raw cashews. Now, this is exactly the way the recipe is in the book. You need 1/4 cup of quick cooking oats. And if you want to have a touch of cinnamon, which I think is magical, you'll use about 1/2 teaspoon. And then also she mentions the non-hydrogenated vegan margarine. And then about 11 slices of whole grain bread. So this is, you're going to eat a few pieces, let me tell you. Okay, so 11 slices of bread. All right, now, Mary Beth, where do we go from here?
Yeah, okay, oh, this is awesome. And, you know, it's great because 11 slices of bread is almost a whole loaf, really, depending on the bread. When I make this for my kids, they will eat the entire loaf of bread, which is amazing, especially when it's, you know, one of those really earthy whole grain breads. It's incredible they'll eat it. Okay, so in the blender, you put your non-dairy milk. I like to go with the vanilla flavor. And like you said, if somebody's not vegan, you know, just use whatever milk you have. You have the milk in there, and that kind of provides the base. Then you add these cashews. They're not the salted cashews, just the plain, unsalted, raw cashews. And those go in the blender also. The cashews are going to make it very, very rich. We're talking about a really rich French toast here. The other ingredient that's going into the blender are quick-cooking oats. Now, normally I don't use quick-cooking oats. Like, if I'm going to make oatmeal, I'm going to make rolled oats, or I'm going to make, you know, the steel-cut oats, something that has all the fiber intact. But in this case, I actually want something that that is going to cook a little softer. And when the quick-cooking oats go in the blender also, of course, then I blend it all together. I get this mixture. I'll tell you while it's cooking about the quick-cooking oats. So basically, in the blender, you have your milk, you have your cashews, and you have your quick-cooking oats. Blend that, you know, add a little cinnamon, like you said, if you want to do that, which makes it really magical. I love that word that you just used. And then when you go to cook the French toast, you dip your bread, you pour that mixture into a pan of some sort. You dip your bread in it, You go to fry the bread just like you would any French toast. It's really no different from that point. What happens is that quick cooking oats, which of course is now totally blended in, you wouldn't know that it's there. It firms up. It pulls everything together. So I'm trying to think of the best way to describe it. It works as a really nice.
It creates its own crust, I think.
Yes, that's it right there. That is exactly it. And now the trick when you're making this, though, I don't know if you've prepared it or not, you do want to be careful to wait to flip it until it's truly ready to be flipped. You don't want to be going back and forth too many times. You want to just really watch it and take care of it and, you know, be nice to it. Use a good frying pan. I like to use those really heavy bottom pans. I think those are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Or a nonstick pan. And I'm telling you what, it is so divine. It's an amazing recipe. I love it. I wanted to call that recipe The Art of Vegan French Toast or something like that, but the book publishing company that I'm working with, they like to keep things nice and simple, make it appeal to everybody. You don't need any crazy little, you know, names. But I happen to love that recipe. No one's ever asked me about it in an interview, so it's actually really a pleasure that you brought it up.
I like sweet things, and I'll tell you what, I'm even going to be more decadent. I'd use maple syrup with this, too. I mean, let's do it. If we're going to do it good, use the real stuff. Maple syrup is just absolutely awesome. Absolutely awesome.
Yeah, so I agree with you totally.
You have these wonderful flavors, and if you like cashews, that's great. Now, I'm going to ask you a question about this recipe. If someone didn't like cashews and they wanted to put walnuts in, or if they wanted to use almonds.
Ooh, wow.
I think the almonds would be magical.
I think the almonds would be magical, too, because the almond flavor kind of goes with the whole vanilla, maple syrup, cinnamon. You know, the almonds fit in there. The walnuts would work fine, but it would have to be someone who really wants a walnut-flavored French toast. It would be like, we're making walnut French toast. It's going to have a strong walnut flavor, which is wonderful if you like walnuts. The thing with the cashews is they don't really have much flavor at all. So you get this richness without really any extra flavor. But doing it with the almonds, probably especially almonds that maybe have been peeled, I might go with.
Oh, yes, blanched.
The blanched and peeled.
Yeah.
I think that, you know what, I've never tried it with the almonds, but I think it would be fantastic.
Woohoo! We got a recipe adaptation out of that.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Right. Now, let's talk about a main dish, because you have a recipe in here. I know nobody who's listening has heard of this. Ravioli with broccoli and coconut sauce. Now, my husband absolutely loves coconut. If he can get shrimps with coconut on it, coconut shrimp prawns, he's happy. He just absolutely loves coconut. He loves it in baked items, everything. Ravioli with broccoli in coconut sauce really grabbed me, and I thought, here we go. Okay, those of you listening, this is what we've got here. You're going to need a can, 14 ounces of coconut. This has got four ingredients in it. How simple is that going to be for you? One can of coconut milk, 14 ounces. You need 2 cups of broccoli florets, or you can get a frozen package of chopped broccoli. You want to make sure that you thaw it out and let it drain. So just zip it out of the package, put it in a strainer, go about doing whatever you're going to do, and then it'll thaw out for you, be all drained. The water will dump through the strainer into your bowl. And then you're going to need one package, 13 to 15 ounces of frozen butternut squash ravioli, and those you can buy at your handy-dandy grocery store. And then 2 tablespoons of finely chopped peanuts. Now that's it. This cookbook is all about simplicity. 4 ingredients. That's all you need. All right, take it over, Mary Beth.
Yeah, this is an interesting one. I think there's one in there also with pierogies that are cooked in an unusual way. But you know, we can buy these wonderful, delicious, fun, convenience foods like ravioli. You can get some really good ones, you know, in the health food aisles, especially in the health food stores, in the frozen section. And this is a way that you can. You can cook the ravioli in an unusual way. It basically simmers in the coconut sauce with the vegetables. And it's absolutely delicious. You could put the ravioli in there frozen. You've got lots of veggies. it takes comfort level to a new level. It really comfort food to a really to a totally new level. There's another recipe in there that is a little bit similar to that one. It's pierogies cooked in spaghetti sauce with broccoli. And I think there's some kind of a green herb added, you know, on top of it. But you'd be surprised how you can cook some of these fun little convenience foods. You can really jazz them up a lot. And, of course, it's all just a way to add more vegetables. It's really just a vehicle to add more veggies.
Absolutely. And I think it's just incredible. Now, you had something that I thought was just a Southern dish, and I know we've got listeners in the South, but you call it new-fashioned greens and black-eyed peas. Well, greens and black-eyed peas are just a mainstay. That has been something we have family from the South, and gee whiz, on New Year's Day, you're always supposed to serve black-eyed peas and make sure you leave one for good luck in your dish. But this is something where you combine everything together, and this is what you need, folks. You need a tablespoon of extra virgin olive oil, 2 to 4 cloves of garlic. You can mince it or you can press it. You need one large bunch of collard greens, and you want to trim them, and you want to coarsely chop them. It'll come to about 6 cups. If you cannot get collards wherever you are, substitute kale. I mean, you can use kale, mustard greens, any green that is fresh that's grown in your local market. If you can buy it from your local grocer, it's absolutely phenomenal. They've come out, wow, I mean, I was getting kale up in Fairbanks, Alaska. I couldn't believe it at a major store, and it was delicious. I mean, these are hearty vegetables. They're really good also when you have the greens. And this is just a little health tip to keeping you good and strong during the winter months so you're not as vulnerable to your colds and your flus. They're really good for your immune system. 2 cans, 15 ounces each of black-eyed peas. You want to rinse them and drain them. And then you have here 1/4 cup of Worcestershire sauce, but you have a vegan Worcestershire sauce in the recipe. So for those of you that are not vegans, you can use regular Worcestershire, and of course you can salt and pepper to taste. All right, Mary Beth, your turn.
Oh yeah, I love this. You know, greens and black-eyed peas together. You know, anything together. I'm into cooking everything in one pot. I don't like to have a whole bunch of different pots going on the stove. You know, it's easier for me to throw it all together. And traditionally, you know, as you probably know, in the South, the greens are cooked for a really, really, really long time. Oftentimes with certain kind of fats that aren't so healthy added to them. So the reason I call this one the new fashioned is because, you know, the greens are just cooked till tender. And, of course, the black-eyed peas are in there. So you've got this one, talk about high calcium. Holy cow, this is like a really, really high calcium dish. And it's got the garlic in there for flavoring, and it's got the Worcestershire sauce in there for flavoring. And that's really all you need. I mean, it's absolutely delicious. And the nice thing about something like that is you can eat it for dinner. You have the leftovers the next day. You can eat the leftovers cold. You can throw the leftovers on top of a salad. You can, you know, it's just simple. You could use the leftovers as the basis of a soup. You know, maybe I'll add some more stuff to this. What will happen if I add a can of tomatoes and some broth? You know, you can turn it into anything. But a lot of times people aren't really sure how to cook greens, and they think of it as a side dish, which means, not only do they have to use a second pan or a third pan or whatever, they have to use a separate pan, but also what do I, like how long do I cook them for? What should I season it with? Do I add soy sauce? Do I add garlic? What do I add? How tender should they be? When the greens just get thrown in to part of a recipe, then you don't even have to think about it. You know, you don't have to worry about flavoring them on the side. And,
That's true.
Yeah, so I love that recipe. I really do. And I'm glad you pointed that one out also.
Well, I know in our household, kale is one of our favorite vegetables, and I've known through the years women that have included, and I learned this from black women, that they said that when they were growing up, this was a mainstay of their diet, and I didn't know many of these women that had bone problems. I didn't, that was not their deal. In fact, they would have very strong iron levels, which so many women are deficient in, and they were getting it through their food. And many times, because of the way that they were raised, they tried to have gardens in their own backyard. If they lived in an apartment, they tried to have something maybe out on their balcony to grow these greens because they knew how healthy they were. And I was talking to someone not that long ago about dandelion greens. Now, for most of us, we're out there with a pesticide trying to spray them away because we don't want anything mucking up the grass. But if you go back into cultures like the Italian culture, and you take the people in the Appalachian Mountains and in the, you know, in the Ozarks, back in the South again, they would actually go out and get the greens that grew wild. That was part of their spring tonic when you came out of winter. This is how they enabled themselves to get back the energy that they had lost. And Mother Nature, if they were poor, which so many of them were, they took it from the wild. That's where they got it from. They'd watch for it, and the dandelion greens would go into their stews, and they had special concoctions they put together. Every family had their spring tonic, as they called it. But during the winter, these hardy vegetables are great.
Yes, the dandelion greens are incredible. Just a little suggestion for your listeners, if they put some potatoes in the oven and have ready some, you know, dandelion greens that are washed and chopped up, and some black olives, and let's see, what else? Some olives, maybe some French vinaigrette. When the potatoes come out of the oven and they're all hot, cut them into, so just sort of try to chop them up as best you can, coarsely chopped. Mm-hmm. And while they're still really hot, put the vinaigrette and the greens into it and stir it together along with the olives, and the dandelion greens will wilt. And it's like beyond fantastic how that tastes. And, you know, something you just said about those women that were eating all these dark greens that didn't have osteoporosis, you know, it's interesting because the elephants don't have osteoporosis. The giraffes mm-hmm. don't have osteoporosis. The deer don't have osteoporosis. And pretty much their entire life they're just eating green plants. Well, mm-hmm. they're eating other colors, too, but the green plants make up the bulk of their diet. There is so much calcium in there. There's a person I know, a dietitian, his name is George Eisman, and he makes appearances at a lot of events around the country. And one of the things that he does, he talks about many different subjects. One of them is he does a wild edibles walk. He'll take people for a walk, wherever you are. He'll see stuff growing out of the sidewalk cracks. He'll be like, oh, yeah, that's got more calcium in it than kale. You know, it's like we should be mm-hmm. eating that stuff. But, of course, you can't just pick it up from between the sidewalk cracks and eat it because you don't know if it's been contaminated or not.
Mm-hmm. That's
going in,
true.
Like you said, going into the wild is the way to go.
Right. Well, it's just a point of information because there are a lot of things culturally. The Italians would use those natural greens, and I had a very dear friend. He was in his 80s, and he would tell me about how when they went through the Depression, his mother would get together with another woman, and they would go out into the fields and pick the dandelions and the greens that they recognized when they were fresh, when they were young, and would bring them home. And he said, we never went hungry. Mom always had something on the stove. We always had the beans, so we were getting the protein. And whenever we had extra meat, they weren't vegans, but whenever they could have extra meat, that's what it was. But he said, we were healthy. We were very strong and healthy. So this is something when you're telling the kids to eat the greens, and I know we're just about out of time here, the four-ingredient vegan cookbook, this is just so wonderful because it gives you a whole different perspective of how to work with vegetables. And if you're not a vegan, you can adapt these. If you wanted to add a little meat or, you know, chicken or fish or something like this, you could to a lot of these dishes. The choice mm-hmm. is yours. But these are good dishes, four ingredients for each one. The delicious flavors are there. Mary Beth, what's the website that people can go to find
if
out
they'd
more?
Like to know, yeah, they can go to my website, marybethabrams.com. If they're specifically interested in the book, they can just go to Amazon or Google the name of the book, and they'll see it show up on a whole slew of sites, the four ingredients.
All right,
vegan.
And that's Mary Beth, MaryBeth Abrams, Abrams. Mary Beth Abrams has been my guest today. Four ingredient vegan. If you're not salivating, well, that's okay. I think there's a few people who are. Just remember that this book is available to you, and it's handy. And if you ever have to have guests that are vegans or vegetarians of type, you've got something handy. Delicious food can be on your table, and everybody can enjoy it. This is Donna Sebo. Mary Beth, thank you so much for being my guest today. We are going to be taking a break, and I'll be back in just a minute. Don't go away.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Donna. Well, we're going to be going from vegan into giving you information about a wonderful cheesecake that is going to be low in calories, but it's not vegan. But that's okay. You know, when you're cooking, one of the wonderful things and one of the wonderful joys about cooking is being able to improvise. And I wanted to share with you a recipe. It's really, really simple that I have served during the holidays, like with our Christmas dinner. And we actually eat it off and on during the year, and I adapt it accordingly. But we're meat eaters at our household, so I enjoy chicken more than I do beef. I'm not a big person for beef, but my husband loves his beef and pork and all kinds of, you know, different meats we really do enjoy. But if you want to have a real healthy meal and you want to use something like kale, let me tell you a recipe that I do. I go and I buy, and you can use your crock pot. It's absolutely marvelous. Or you can use a Dutch oven on the top of the stove and you just leave it at the lowest temperature possible. But you take your kale and you wash it. I've done this with mustard greens as well. And you just make sure it's washed well. And then you take the kale. Sometimes kale, dependent on how old it is when they pick it, it will have a very thick stalk to it. If it is a real thick stalk, you want to strip the leaf away from the stalk because the stalk will often be woody. So what you do, you just take and you just break into pieces the kale and put a layer of kale in, let's say, the bottom of your crock pot, because this is how I fix it at home. And that way I don't have to heat up the kitchen or anything. I just put the kale at the bottom of the crock pot. And I'll use 2 or 3 bunches. You need to remember, when you're cooking mustard green, kale, spinach, it all shrinks. It all will lose its moisture and will become a lot less. It's going to look, you know, just absolutely tremendous in volume. And it is not that at all when it starts cooking. It doesn't take long for it to start shrinking down. But I put in a layer of kale, I put in a layer of onion, and I like just regular yellow onions. You can put in whatever your favorite onion is. And then I put in a layer of meat. Now, I especially like the smoked meats, and I'll sometimes put in bacon, or I'll put in a pork. Beef has a different flavor to it, so whatever you like, but you put in a layer of meat. Doesn't have to be a whole bunch, just a little bit for flavoring. And then you add potatoes. I prefer sweet potatoes. but you can layer in sweet potatoes or white potatoes, and you just then repeat kale and your onion and your meat and your sweet potato. Now, if you don't want any meat in there, you don't have to put the meat in if you don't want it. And then you add your seasonings. And I like to use garlic. I like to use salt and pepper. It all depends on your taste buds. Sometimes I even like to use some red peppers in it, some dried red peppers, and just sprinkle it in and through. And then you put the lid on the crock pot. You might want to add a little bit of water. Now, when you wash your greens, you can just put them right into the pot while they're wet, and that adds moisture. But you might want to add about a half a cup to a cup of water, and that is going to enable it all to come together. We've used bacon with this, which has just been fabulous. We have a particular bacon we like to use. But anyway, you put the lid on it, let it just simmer away, and you keep it on a very, very low heat. You'll find that the volume of the greens will just go down, and the flavors of the sweet potato, the onion, if you like to use sausage, again, bacon, pork, whatever you want, choose the meat of your choice, all of the flavors merge together. Now, if you have something fatty in it, let's say like some sausage, some Italian sausage, or some kind of a flavorful sausage you want to use as your meat, what happens is the greens absorb the fat. It will not come out greasy. And this has been a hit with just about anybody that's ever had it at our home. And the flavors are incredible. Of course, use salt and pepper to your own taste. But it is just a wonderful dish, so I share that with you. It's from my home to yours because I just think it's good to share recipes. But it's a great way during the winter months to get the minerals that you need, the nutrition that you need. So you can adapt the recipe in any way that you want. And that's important because we all have our special tastes and things that we really, really enjoy. But greens can be rather bitter. So it's something that's one of the reasons why with collard greens in the South, people would wash them and cook them and then dump out the cook water. Well, when you do that, when you dump out your liquid, then it's called a liquor. And the reason it's called the liquor is because it contains all the nutrients. So you have that. You want to serve it with your vegetables because the nutrients are in the water itself. Real good stuff. Well, I'm going to give you the cheesecake recipe, but if you'd like to call in and chat with me, here's the toll-free worldwide telephone number to call into, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. All I need from you is your first name or your initial, and then after that, you are welcome to ask me a question about anything that you like. Also, don't forget, I'm collecting 100 stories about the paranormal. If you have had a unique experience in your life where you really want to share what it was and how it affected you, I'd love to hear from you. Just send it to Donna@DelphiInternational.com, whether it's seeing a ghost, being out of the body, near-death experience. I'm interested in anything and everything, and I think it's good when we can share our stories. So if you would like to be included in the publication, again, I would love to hear from you. Send it to me via email, Donna@DelphiInternational.com. Okay, I didn't have time yesterday to give you the information on this lighter cheesecake. Now, it's going to take about an hour and a half to cook, and it's going to take then also 5 hours of cooling time. Cheesecakes, depending on the recipe you have, we're not talking about the box thing that you get at the store that you put in a graham cracker crust and ho, 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 we've got cheesecake. No, no, no. This is one where you really need to pay attention to the timing on it. But the calories are really going to be less, but you're going to have the flavor. Now, is all the fat out of it? No, 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 no. Cheesecake has to have a form of fat. But this is the recipe, and you're going to find that it is really flavorful because we're going to have a little bit of espresso powder and coffee liqueur like Kahlua. Okay, it is a good recipe. And again, remember, with recipes, don't hesitate to experiment on your own with different flavors. This is how it goes. Now, this is a good-sized cheesecake. It'll serve 16 people, and this is what you're going to need. You're going to need 6 chocolate wafer cookies or chocolate graham crackers. You're going to need 6 of them. You're going to need a tablespoon plus 1 1/4 cups of sugar. A tablespoon plus 1 1/4 cups of sugar. You're going to need 2 tablespoons of instant espresso or dark roast coffee powder. 2 tablespoons of instant espresso or dark roast coffee powder. You're going to need 2 1/2 tablespoons of coffee liqueur. Now, if you don't want the liqueur in it, substitute water. 2 1/2 tablespoons of coffee liqueur or water. You're going to need 2 cups of non-fat cottage cheese. 2 cups of non-fat cottage cheese. 1 1/3 cups of reduced fat sour cream. Remember, this is not non-fat sour cream. It's reduced fat. You need the fat molecules so that the cheesecake sticks together the way it's supposed to. Then you're going to need 12 ounces of Neufchâtel cheese. You want the reduced fat cream cheese. 12 ounces of that. You're going to need 6 tablespoons of all-purpose flour. 6 tablespoons of all-purpose flour. 2 large eggs. 2 large egg whites. 2 tablespoons of unsweetened cocoa powder, 2 tablespoons, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of salt, and have some extra cocoa powder on the side. Now, you want to preheat your oven to 300 degrees. Now, remember, all of your ingredients need to be at room temperature. Here we go. You're going to need to coat a 9-inch springform pan with cooking spray. And you want to take a rolling pin, or, you know, if you've got one of those little mallets, just, or a heavy skillet. And what you do is put your cookies inside a plastic bag and you just crush them into fine crumbs. And then in a small bowl, you're going to take your cookie crumbs with a tablespoon of the sugar. And then you want to pour your mixture into the prepared pan and tilt it so that it coats the bottom and the sides. You don't have to press it. You just want to just move that pan around so that it'll be coated. And then in another small bowl, you want to dissolve the powder, the espresso powder, or your powdered coffee, into the liqueur or water, and you want to put that to the side. Your cottage cheese, you put in a double layer of cheesecloth, and you take the corners at the top, twist them together, and you squeeze. And you let all of that liquid go through the cheesecloth because you want that cottage cheese as dry as possible. You're going to take that drained cottage cheese, put it in a fruit processor, process it until it's creamy smooth. That'll take any time at all with those whirling steel blades. It'll be just 2 minutes. Then add your sour cream, your Neufchâtel cheese, your flour, eggs, egg whites, cocoa, cinnamon, salt, and the remaining 1 1/4 cups of sugar, and the dissolved espresso powder. Put it right there in your Cuisinart or mixer and just let it rip. Just turn it on and let it just mix until it is as smooth as silk. You're going to pour the batter into the prepared pan. You want to bake it for 50 to 60 minutes. Now, when you're at the 50-minute level, all of this depends on the heat in your oven, you want to check your cheesecake, and the edges should be set 1 inch from the sides, but the center of the cake is going to be a little wobbly, not liquidy, but a little wobbly. You want to turn off the oven, and you want to leave that cheesecake inside with the door closed for 30 minutes longer, because that cheesecake is going to continue to cook. Then what do? You set your cheesecake on a wire rack to cool completely about an hour. And you want to refrigerate it for at least 4 hours before removing it from the pan and serving. And then, of course, you can just sprinkle the beautiful cheesecake that you have made with some cocoa powder. Good stuff. A serving is only 184 calories. That's all. Yes, good stuff. We're taking a break. When we come back, I'll share with you who's coming up, and a story about a woman whose military training saved her life. Donna Sebo here. We'll be back in just a moment. Give me a call, 888-815-9756.
Enter the magical world of God's kiss.
He sees a large open area of valley ground covered with a thick green grass. In the open space are many other children and animals. All kinds of animals. And all of the animals are talking. He can understand every word they are saying.
God's Kiss is a beautifully illustrated children's book about a young boy's journey into a valley with children and animals from all over the world. They are gathering together to experience the wonder of love and beauty that will affect their lives forever. A talking book audio narrated by the author Donna Sebo accompanies this wonderful storybook, creating a special magic all of its own. This book package makes a wonderful gift for those special children in your life, ages 3 to 10. God's Kiss book and talking book audio are only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. And the author, Donna Sebo, will autograph and personalize your book if you request it. Call 800-872-8852. You can also order through Donna Sebo's website, www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat, 888-815-9756. Tomorrow we're going to be talking with Tommy Spaulding, Not Just Who You Know is the title of his publication. Very insightful perspectives about becoming the success that you aspire to be. On Thursday, we're going to be talking with Margaret Hawkins about how her sister Barb came back from years of being in a schizophrenic attitude and environment, and her story is powerful. And then on Friday, it's an open mic day. Telephone lines will be open the entire hour, so that's coming up. And, of course, we've got some wonderful guests coming up in November, and that is going to be all put up on BBS's website when we have the opportunity to do that, so you'll know who's coming on and who is going to be with me during the month of November. Okay, I said I had a story here about a young woman. Her name is Charity Gibson. This is a young woman whose life was saved because she said her military training had prepared her mentally and emotionally to survive an experience that most people, male or female, would not have thought through as she did. And she said that she really works well under pressure. Part of that, she said her dad taught her how to do that. And she said, I just learned how to trust, and I found that when I went into the military, she served in the military for 6 years, she was able to adapt to all kinds of situations because that was part of her training. And she said the one thing that was emphasized over and over and over again was be prepared. And even if everything around you is going haywire, you have the knowledge, the tools, whatever's necessary to get the job done. Well, she ended up becoming very skilled at flying. However, she had just finished a flying class, was getting certified, and after the class had finished, she got into her car and headed on home. Well, there was a car that pulled in behind her as she was driving on her way home, and she noticed in a rearview mirror, she kept checking things, habit, and she said, that car is following me. She thought, well, maybe it's my imagination. But as she got closer to where she lived, which was in an apartment building, she checked her rearview mirror. This car that she had noticed miles before was still there. Well, she had a secured parking lot area and pulled into her parking space and turned the engine off, and the next thing she sees is someone approaching her vehicle. It's a male. He's wearing a hoodie and also sunglasses, and she knew immediately. All of her instincts kicked in. She was in trouble. She had been looked at as a victim, and that was the name of the game. So she immediately started looking around, what options did she have? And to the best of her capacity, she said she had the option of restarting the engine and floor it, getting out of the parking space she was in, or to get out of the car and to run. Well, she said she ruled out the car. She didn't want to stay in the car. She didn't want to be trapped inside. So she got her keys and her cell phone, got out, and the next thing she knew, there was a gun in her face. The person that was in the mask and had the gun in his hand wanted a purse, and she said, I don't have a purse. He said, give me your purse. And she knew that this guy, emotionally, was very, very unstable. He shoves the gun in her stomach, and she said, he took her keys and her phone, and he popped the trunk of her car. And he forced her to get into the back of her car, and she ended up facing the trunk. She climbed in, and she said she had been taught at a military briefing that if she got inside the trunk of a vehicle, she probably would end up dying. And he wouldn't give her any options, so she ends up getting in the trunk. But she remembered something that had been taught to her, and that was always know where the trunk release is in your vehicle. And she had literally memorized her manual of her car, which happened to be a Mustang. And she said she knew where every gauge, knob, and display in her instrument panel was, as well, you know, when she was flying, she had to have that kind of an attitude. So she said she knew this about her car, and she knew where the trunk release was. Well, she slammed in, and she knew that this was a very, very dangerous situation. Now, she didn't panic. Her training came in handy. She found the trunk release, and something told her, you're going to have just one chance at getting out of this vehicle. And she said, there wasn't much to see. You know, it's obviously very dark inside, not much room to move around. And she said to herself, I've got to pay attention to what's going on. She had no idea what they had in mind for her. And she said, you know what? I survived 6 years in the military. I was in active duty, spent 4 months in Operation Enduring Freedom. And she said, I am not going to let this get to me. So she knew that there were going to be times that he had to slow down. She waited. There was going to be a stop sign somewhere. Sure enough, the car came to a stop. She heard another car honk. He accelerated. But she said she remembered, again, where that release latch was in the trunk. She pressed it when the vehicle stopped. She jumped up out of the trunk, got out, landed on her feet, and there was a car that was right there behind the Mustang that she had been in. She saw the driver's eyes. The driver couldn't believe what was happening right in front of him, a woman jumping out of the trunk, and she started running. She ran through yards. She just was going to put as much distance between herself and the kidnapper. And finally, she went to a house and banged on the door, said, help, I need help, call 911, I've been kidnapped. Interestingly enough, there was a police officer that heard the 911 call and was in the neighborhood. And they found the kidnappers the next day. They were teenagers. They were trying to impress a gang by stealing a sports car. And the officer told her, you have no idea how lucky you are. Carjackings that escalate into kidnappings rarely turn out well. Charity said, I was prepared from previous training, and I had a calm mind. It wasn't luck. It was thinking things through. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow, we'll be talking about how you can be successful. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. Have a magnificent day or evening wherever you are. We'll be back here same time, same place, right here on BBSRadio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.